This is Case Closed, crime stories from the golden age of radio. Welcome back to Case Closed, an hour of old-time radio crime Wednesdays at RelicRadio.com. Our first story this week comes from Jeff Regan Investigator. It's titled The Man Who Fought Back. This one aired November 27th, 1948. After that, it's yours truly, Johnny Dollar. In an early episode from him, The Slow Boat from China. This one aired February 25th, 1949.
Regan. I get 10 a day and expenses from a detective bureau run by a guy named Anthony J. Lyon. They call me the Lion's Eye.
With Jack Webb as Jeff Regan, the Lion's Eye, stand by for hard-boiled action and mystery and thrilling adventure in tonight's story of the man who fought back.
There's a street crammed in between Wilton and Van Ness in Hollywood. It's called Taft Avenue. It's a couple of blocks long, and it only got there because the city planners had a few tons of cement left over from the Coliseum. On the corner, there's a gray building poking its way up through a crack in the pavement. That's where I live. Apartment K. Two rooms with a connecting door to a broom closet. Oh, the place isn't much. Couple of chairs, a bed that comes out of the wall, and a mattress that could pass itself off as a relief map of the High Sierras. Well, that's where I was the other night around 11, trying to catch some sleep. That's when my phone began making an impression. It turned out to be the Lion.
Hey, Regan, I'm glad I found you home. Are you alone?
What's the matter? Did you lose your voice?
Just a precaution. I got a hold of a good thing, and I don't want to lose it by indiscreet talk.
Well, then write me a letter.
We've just been hired. You start tonight.
It'll keep till morning.
Her name's Alice Lafarge. She'll meet you in a bar called the Princess across the street from Pershing Square. Get going.
What's her trouble?
She'll tell you all about it when you get there.
Can't you tell me?
I haven't got the time right now, but there's nothing to it. I'd handle it myself if I didn't have a big deal on.
Flirting with widows in Pasadena, huh?
So I got a social engagement. It helps our business. Pays to be seen in high society.
And besides, the liquor's good.
You just get over to see the Lafarge, Dave. And give me a ring in the morning and let me know how you make out.
All right, lover.
Hey, Regan.
Huh?
What should I take to my Pasadena girlfriend? Flowers or candy?
You better take both. You're going to need all the help you can get. I threw on some clothes and I headed for town. My car found a parking lot off Olive, and I cut through Pershing Square to make it over the hill. It was after midnight. A sailor was chasing a bow-legged Marine over the grass. He brought him down on about the 40-yard line. The Princess Bar showed up near the corner of 6th, a little place holding up six stories of granite. I went inside. A mustache was trying real hard on a piano. 200 pounds of bartender was moving a wet rag over the bar in slow motion. A girl was sitting on the far stool in a black purse with the initials ALF, Alice Lafarge. If you looked real hard, you could find her eyes. I gave up on her lips. I lowered myself onto the stool next to her. She looked tired, like a chorus girl on a Sunday morning.
Yes?
I'm Regan, international detective.
How do I know?
You will when you get the bill.
You're late, Mr. Regan.
Well, I didn't pick up any traffic tickets, if that's what you wanted.
Well, it doesn't matter. We have a few minutes yet.
What are we waiting for?
12:30. Can I buy you a drink, Mr. Regan?
You're calling it.
Bartender.
Hey, what'll it be, miss?
I'm not drinking. Serve the gentleman.
Scotch?
Bourbon and water.
Got some pretty tasty scotch, buddy.
Bourbon.
Just trying. I get a commission on the scotch.
All right, lady, now let's have it.
Do you live far from here, Mr. Regan?
About 20 minutes.
Well, you better run home and throw a change of clothes into a suitcase.
Out-of-town job?
No, but you'll need a change. Bring along a deck of cards and a thick book.
Anything else?
Call off any dates you may have. You're going to be out of circulation for the weekend. Here's an address at the hotel on North Figueroa. Get there as soon as you can.
You still haven't said anything. What's the job?
You'll find out when you get there.
I'll get tired of waiting. Come on, lady, let's open it up.
Here you are, buddy. Scotch. You're leaving us, miss? Next one's free.
Thanks, anyway.
Okay.
Now, look, beat it, you, and take that scotch with you.
Okay. Drink it myself. I still get the commission.
All right, now, come on, sis. Let's have the rest of it.
I'm sorry, Mr. Regan. That's all I can tell you now. Just be at that address as soon as you can.
As she slid off the stool and moved for the front door, I caught a view of her in the mirror. There was nothing there to make a guy want an encore. Sandy hair, short, thin body that you could have slipped into a mailbox. Well, she threw the door shut behind her. A couple of seconds ticked by, and I moved out after her. I made the street just in time to see her climb into a cab and start up 6th. That's when I spotted the red Austin with an Illinois license. It was a Glen plaid sleeve sticking out of the left side, and that's all I got of the driver, except that he was doing a real bad tag job on the Lafarge girl. The North Figueroa address Alice Lafarge gave me turned out to be the Gladstone Hotel, a two-layer pile of wood so old that the termites were getting indigestion. A short guy with a shiny head was catching up on his reading in the lobby. He put down the seat catalog long enough to tell me that apartment 3B was upstairs in the back. A couple of knocks on the door, and Alice let me in. Sitting in the corner was a bush of gray hair and a white face. Turned out to be a man with a worried look, like an alligator in a handbag factory.
Shut the door, Alice.
Yes, Dad.
Thanks for coming, Regan.
I'll let you know later if you're welcome.
Take his things, Alice.
No, I'm going to hang on to him for a while.
Sit yourself, but your coat will get heavy in a few hours.
What says I'm going to stay that long?
Me? That's what you're hired for.
What else?
Lots of time to get to that. Let's get to know each other first.
You got a name?
I'm Bill Lafarge. Sort of fancy, but I like it.
Give me some more.
Not much more. Just an old joker with nothing left but a few years and a regular dud.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Regan, this isn't my real address. I just moved here.
Yeah, the rent's low.
That's not it. Bill Lafarge can handle more.
All right, you can skip the bank statement, mister.
Will you please try to be civil, Mr. Regan?
That's not what you hired me for.
It's okay, Alice. Can't say I blame him.
All right, then. Let's throw it in gear, huh?
Not much to your job, Regan. Just spend the weekend with me.
I've had better offers.
Yeah, I did, too, in my time. Well, that's the easy part of it.
You got something hard?
You stay awake the next 48 hours and keep looking at me.
Who's after you?
Nobody.
I figure different.
You could be wrong.
Shades down, lights out, red Austin on a tag job.
What do you mean?
Plaid suit moved out after you when you left the Princess.
You sure he was following Alice?
Like you said, I could be wrong.
Get one thing straight, Regan. I never hire anybody to protect me. Bill Lafarge handles things like that himself. You're here as a witness.
What for?
Just in case somebody wants some testifying as to how I spent this weekend.
All right.
Now throw off your coat. Let's play a little cards.
Why not?
Alice, open the window. It's getting a little hot in here.
All right, Dad.
Good girl. Gin, Mummy?
You're dealing.
Now, how do you want to play? 2 bits if you...
Shots came flying in from the alley and didn't stop until they caught Alice Lafarge. They blew her back into the room and she did a full turn like a ballet dancer showing off. By the time her father and I got to her, it was all over. The old man straightened up and began mumbling something about Red Austin. I stepped for the phone. I put in a call to Sanducci at Homicide. He took down the story and promised to send out some company. And then I cradled the phone. That's when I knew I was alone with the girl. Old man Lafarge had hot-footed it out of the building like a super chief on a holiday weekend. Well, the boys from Homicide showed in a couple of minutes, and they had a few questions. I gave them what I had, and Sanducci tabled the rest until the next day. So I went home to relax. You know, the lion could have made a good detective. He always finds me.
Regan, I'm not paying you to sit at home. Get your coat on and explain this.
What?
This newspaper story. There's a big lie in here about the Lafarge dame getting killed. Now, I know you wouldn't allow that to happen to one of our clients.
It was real hard, but I managed.
I give you a simple little job and you turn it into a murder. You getting a commission from Forest Lawn?
You got your hands full, too.
What do you mean?
Sanducci will be visiting you with a pocket full of questions.
I don't know nothing about her shooting. I was out in Pasadena all night playing a guitar, and I got a sore finger to prove it.
Now, you listen to me, Big Shot. You better start sniffing around and turn up a Red Austin with a plaid suit behind the wheel.
Whatever.
Get some information on Bill Lafarge, the girl's father.
Hey, what's that?
You know, I bet if we open it, we'll find out.
Well, I better get a move on. Just open the door a little bit, and I'll squeeze by.
Yeah.
Hello, Lieutenant. Nice to see you, Tango G.
Where's he going?
He's getting in line for Notre Dame tickets. When did you take up knocking, Sanducci, huh?
New directive went through the department. Show a little more courtesy.
You don't wear it well.
And I figure it's political. They're working on building up a gate for the next policeman's show.
Gotta put you on. You're worth a couple of laughs.
Yeah. I'll speak to the boys. How did you sleep last night, Regan?
Fine.
You shouldn't have. The murderer should have given you nightmares.
There's always Ovaltine.
You know, some of the boys down at headquarters figure you know more about this shooting than you're saying.
Well, they made mistakes before.
No, I'm not saying. I feel like they do.
What do you want?
Who knocked off the Lafarge girl?
You're asking yourself.
Wrong answer.
How would you know?
She got it with a .45. What do you want?
You know what I own.
But I don't know about Lafarge.
The shots came in through the window. Even you can figure that.
He could have had help.
Talk to him.
I will when we pick him up. In the meantime, it's you and me.
You got nothing on me.
We found a roll of dough in a briefcase in the bottom bureau drawer. What was it doing there?
I don't know.
All right, Regan. Now let me give you a tip. The word's out Lafarge got a private war on. I don't want any more shooting, so I look at it this way. He's your client. I'm holding you responsible. Why, and Regan.
Yeah?
Got the what's in a mangiarli soldier to tutto paese. Got the un brisaliere stupidi.
What's that mean?
Go find out. You're a detective.
Well, I don't suppose I'll ever find out. He slid out of the room, and I washed up and had a short breakfast at the corner drugstore and went through the morning paper. The Lafarge murder rated a lot of big type, and there was a picture of Alice right next to the weather report, slightly cooler. After the bottom showed my coffee cup, I went over to the Hollywood Library. The city directory gave William Lafarge an Orange Drive home address and occupation printer. The yellow phone book turned up a Lafarge Preston print shop on Santa Monica near La Brea. It was a small place, the color of stale peanut butter, and it was tucked in between a pet store and a beauty parlor. When I stepped inside the front door, the bell rang, and a couple of pair of tortoise shell glasses covering a couple of deep blue eyes looked at me. She was a brunette with light skin and a voice that sounded like it was diving for sponges. The print shop smell got lost in all that taboo. Good
morning, sir. May I help you?
I'm looking for Mr. Lafarge.
There's no Mr. Lafarge here.
Sign outside says there is.
It's an old one. Won't I do instead?
Now, that's another chapter.
Then turn the page. I think you'd enjoy it.
You know, you ought to put out cards.
Mr. Preston says business has picked up immeasurably since I started working here.
Let's get back to Lafarge.
I told you he's not here.
Well, try Preston for me.
He's very busy.
Well, he can spare a couple of words.
Now, wait a minute. Look, you can't go in there. I'm sorry, Mr. Preston. I told him you were very busy.
All right, Lois. Who are you?
My name's Regan. I'm with International Detective. I got some questions about your partner.
Of course. Please leave us, Lois.
See you later, soldier.
Cigar, Mr. Regan?
No, I won't be here that long.
Well, naturally, I'll be only too happy to tell you anything I can. It was such a shock reading about his poor daughter's death. A wonderful girl.
Lafarge said that.
Yeah, you'd say it, too, if you knew her. She was very good to him. Well, Mr. Regan, what specifically can I tell you?
The book calls this place Lafarge Preston. Somebody's missing.
Well, you see, Bill and I were in partnership for years. When he decided to pull out, I just planned to leave the name the same.
When did he go?
Just a few weeks ago.
Did he give a reason?
I don't know exactly. Implied he had enough money or was coming into some. I'm not sure. But it happened so sudden, left me a little short-handed. Still having trouble finding a first-class engraver to take his place.
I left him sitting there chewing a panatella, and I moved out fast like a sailor on shore leave. It was about 11 and getting warmer. I picked up my car and went home. It took me 10 minutes to track down Sanducci.
Yeah?
Regan.
What do you want me for? Fix a traffic ticket?
Look, I got something for you.
Make it good.
I've been talking with Preston down at the print shop.
Yeah?
Lafarge stepped out kind of fast carrying a roll.
Mm-hmm.
Now look, he knew engraving. I figure you ought to take a good look at that money. It may turn up phony.
I'm not impressed.
All right, I gave it to you. Do what you want.
Look, we checked into the dough already. It's absolutely legit. Now give up, Regan.
Navy didn't.
What's the matter, Regan? She turn you down?
Who let you in?
Stranger in town. Just catching the sights.
Well, they're better outside.
He's off, Regan. You don't know who you're talking to.
Yeah, the name's a blank, but you drive a red Austin.
It's not bad for a beginner. You got a drink around?
Not for you, no.
If I were you, I'd show a little hospitality to an out-of-town boy.
Chicago. South Side, huh?
You're not being very nice.
You weren't invited.
But now that I'm here, that changes some things, huh?
What do you want?
A drink.
No sale.
Listen, fresh
guy. Get your hands off me, punk.
Are you against this? 45 always stops him.
Like it did Lafarge.
How about getting old Gus a drink, huh? Three finger will do. Skip the water. You better fix one for yourself.
No, you're the type that drinks alone.
Oh, you better have one, Regan. It's going to be your last.
How do you figure?
Well, I look at it this way. A guy like me gets hired to do a job. Comes 2,000 miles for it, then pulls a boner.
Like knocking off the daughter instead of Lafarge, huh?
Yeah. Yeah, that's it. Top that off with a witness sitting in the same room who spots my Red Austin. Now, let me ask you something. Can I leave him around breathing good air? According to me, no. Nah.
Knocked together and he caved in like arches on a fat man. Four quick steps took me to the door and I looked down the hall. Nothing there. So I made it for the stairway and I looked down the spiral. An old guy was taking the steps two at a time and stuffing a gun into his overcoat pocket. It was Bill Lafarge.
You were listening to the story of the man who fought back. Tonight's adventure with Jeff Regan, investigator. Commissions are still available in the Army Nurse Corps. Graduate registered nurses between the ages of 21 and 45 may qualify for service with this fine organization. Nurses may request active or inactive status. Those on active status enjoy the same privileges as regular Army officers. Those on inactive status may continue their civilian nursing duties, but stand ready to serve in time of emergency. If you are interested in joining the Army Nurse Corps and believe that you qualify for a commission, apply to the Adjutant General, Washington, D.C. And now, back to the story of the man who fought back, and Jeff Regan, investigator.
Well, things were moving kind of fast. The Lion sent me out to meet a girl named Alice Lafarge. She took me to her father, who wanted a bonded witness to be able to testify to his whereabouts that weekend. That's when a couple of shots came through the window and cut down the daughter. Before homicide put in an appearance, Bill Lafarge was gone, and he didn't show again until Gus killed Alice and then came to see me. And then there was a big roll of money and a print shop in the picture, but it was all out of focus. Well, I moved back into my apartment. The Chicago hood was still there, lying on my rug, and I picked up the phone to call Lieutenant Sanducci. I'd just gotten a couple of numbers out when I caught a familiar smell. It was a load of taboo, and it was packing a .32.
Put the phone down, Regan.
Why?
Because I'm asking you nicely. Put it down. Homicide can wait. Gus isn't going anyplace.
You got a plan, lady?
Mm-hmm.
Well, get back to that print shop, and you'll stay out of trouble.
Mr. Preston's so nice. He gave me the afternoon off. I told him my mother got sick.
All right, lady. Tell me about it.
I'm looking for something.
Name it.
The ignition key to Gus's Austin. Now move over there and get it for me.
What's wrong with your car?
I ran out of gas. Move.
Okay.
Kick his gun away. Now try the overcoat pockets. Throw them.
All right. Good catch.
So they tell me. So long, Regan.
I put in a quick call to homicide, and then I waited a couple of minutes to give her a chance to get a head start. When I stepped out of the building, the Red Austin was just turning the corner. I followed in my car. We wound up in Glendale. She pulled into a duplex driveway next to an empty lot, and I pulled in under a pepper tree up the street a ways. And then she got out and unlocked the trunk. She looked inside, ripped up the floor matting, and then the boards. When she slammed the trunk shut, it figured that she didn't find what she was looking for. Well, 25 minutes later, I found the Lion sitting behind his desk down at the office. He had a bottle of beer in one hand and a package of Sen-Sen in the other. Spread out in front of him was a typewritten piece of paper that he'd just slipped out of his Remington. He had a puzzled look, like a little boy caught in a mixmaster.
Regan, where you been?
Around.
I've been looking all over for you. Sanducci's been calling in every 3 minutes.
What's he want?
The story on how Gus got laid out in your apartment.
Well, I'll drop him a note.
He wants it now.
He's got time. He doesn't come up for a pension for years.
they turn up Lafarge yet?
No, but I turned up something. What would you say if I told you Lafarge did time, Watson?
On a counterfeit rap?
How'd you know?
It figured. That Lois dame is scratching around for something.
The feds put him away for 10 years for making up some phony bonds or stocks or something like that.
Uh-huh. How's his daughter fit?
She waited for him till he got out and then tried to help him play it straight.
What'd you get on Gus?
Who cares about him?
Lois.
Lafarge wasn't in on that bond job alone.
Who else?
He had a partner. The guy who runs the print shop. Preston.
Yeah, you're doing better.
I figure it this way. Preston's got a new racket. And J. Edgar would be real happy to know all about it.
Yeah.
We're going to be the ones to tell him.
How much is the reward?
I don't even know if there is one.
Oh, stop it. When gold went up to $35 an ounce, you pulled your mother's teeth.
Regan, you're getting out of line.
And then you bawled her out for not having more cavities.
Now, you get over to Preston and have a talk with him.
Yeah.
Regan.
Yeah?
Remember, if we crack this thing, it'll mean more money in your pocket, too.
No room for it with your hand there already. I left him sitting there doodling dollar signs, and I went out into the street. It was turning evening. I picked my car out of the lot, and 30 minutes later, I stopped on the corner of Santa Monica and La Brea. The fog was rolling in by then, and the streetlights were trying real hard. I walked to the front door of the print shop. I shook it a little, but nothing gave, so I moved around to the back. The place inside was as dark as a saloon in Kansas, but somebody inside was handy with a gun. So I cracked the window with a rock, and I climbed inside. It smelled like target practice on a rifle range. Preston was curled up on the floor like a piece of wet tissue paper, and there were two holes in him. Well, the game wasn't over, but they were running out of players. I moved for the phone to call the police, and that's when I spotted Bill Lafarge. He was slumped down in a chair with a gun in his hand, and he looked tired. It took a lot of shaking to bring any words out of him. Hey, come on, Lafarge. Hey, hey.
Stop shaking. I'm up. He dead?
Yeah?
Yeah, he was a bum.
You want to give me that gun?
Sure. You got a call into the cops?
No, not yet.
We'll use my car.
Any way you want it.
Yeah, it don't matter much no more. Things go easy for some guys. Other guys get all the rocks.
You got a couple of answers?
Why not? Preston did a tie-in with a gambling syndicate out of Las Vegas. Some joker had a hot idea.
Keep going.
Counterfeit 20,000 New Year's Day bowl tickets and sell them on the open market at $5 plus.
That's big business at 100,000.
But I didn't take. Preston got sore because I wouldn't do the engraving and he got somebody else.
That doesn't add up to murder.
Yeah. Did when his head got working overtime worry and I had too many answers.
And he hired that Chicago boy with the bad eyes.
Yeah. He got my daughter by mistake.
Yeah. Where are the bowl tickets?
Who cares?
How does Lois fit?
I don't know.
All right.
Front door's closer to my car. You drive, Regan. L.A. traffic makes me nervous.
Well, Lafarge was driving a Nash, and it was parked at a filling station. We fought the night traffic downtown to police headquarters and tore Sanducci away from his pinochle game. He sent a couple of boys out to clean up the print shop and then moved Lafarge into a room with a secretary to get the story on paper. I'd heard it before, so I started for home, but Sanducci had other ideas. He put me in a private little room with white walls, and he told me to wait. I thought maybe he'd gone on his vacation, but he finally came in.
Yeah, getting tired of waiting, Regan?
Do you care?
No.
You got something to say?
Maybe.
Well, then spit it out, because I got a date.
It'll keep.
Why are you holding it?
I had to do some checking.
You got all you need?
I didn't think so.
Well, you got it now.
Sit still, Regan. I'm not ready to let you go.
Now, listen, Power. Just because you're wearing a badge inside that coat...
Shut up and listen to me. It took me 18 years to turn in those overstuffed shoes for thin soles. I'm not letting a two-bit detective tell me how to handle my business.
You could stand it.
You and that crummy boss of yours are licensed by the state of California, and we can lift it for acts detrimental to public welfare. We got a whole blotter full.
Tell that to the lion.
I'm telling it to you. Now, that's all. Beat it.
Okay.
Oh, Regan.
Yeah.
One thing more. There's a big hole in Lafarge's story.
What do you mean?
Look at his gun.
Now, what about it?
Look at the caliber.
It's a 38.
That's not the weapon that killed Gus and Preston. You sure you don't own a 32?
Well,
Well, Lafarge was more used up than he figured. He couldn't tell where the dream left off and the murders began. Oh, the whole thing was a screwy picture, but the artist had a woman's touch. 25 minutes later, I pulled my car to a stop in front of a lemon-colored duplex out in Glendale. A high school boy, breathing hard, told me that the good-looking girl lived upstairs. I just hit the top of the landing when the door of her apartment opened and a couple of pieces of airplane luggage moved out. Her ticket didn't show, but it figured to be marked for Las Vegas. When Lois saw me, she looked kind of confused, like a penguin in Death Valley.
Regan.
Hey, your memory's good.
I wish you'd told me you were coming. I'd have dressed for it.
Oh, it's better this way. You're fixed for traveling.
What do you mean?
We'll talk about it inside, huh?
I'd like to. You know that, but I have a few things...
Come on, move it, lady.
Well, what's come over you?
What's inside the suitcase?
You can work that out yourself, Regan. You've been by a woman's shop.
Throw it open.
It'll embarrass you.
I'll take a chance. All right, now dump it over. Come on, sis, your time's running out. Oh, yeah, sure.
Preston had the tickets in an asbestos box hidden in the furnace. I finally turned them up. Regan, they're worth over $100,000.
Yeah, that's what Lafarge said.
I know where to unload them.
It won't do you any good.
What do you mean?
There's no P-exit to Hatchapi. Come on, don't scramble for that 32. It's out of reach.
Let go of me!
You threw those holes into Gus and Preston, figuring homicide would stick Lafarge with a rap, knowing he was out for revenge.
Let me go!
Even the old guy didn't know what was going on.
No, he didn't.
No, but ballistics did.
Regan.
Yeah?
This could mean a lot of dough to us, you and me. We form a partnership.
Yeah, before it's getting damp.
Don't be a piker. Here's your chance to really turn into something.
Well, now you can check with me when you get out, lady, to see if I made it. Well, it all blew apart fast, like an atom at Caltech. Sanducci came down and picked up Lois. She had herself a pretty good thing for a while. Preston could run off the phony bowl tickets, and all she had to do was to sell them. Even though murder got thrown in, she could have stayed clean if she hadn't got her gun calibers mixed. Well, Lafarge was walking the streets in a couple of hours, and the Lion was real happy the way things worked out. He got his picture in the Police Gazette and picked up 2 bona fide passes to the Rose Bowl game. He promised to take me to the game with him. He did. He let me have the ticket at the regular price.
Regan with Herb Butterfield as Anthony J. Lyon. It's CBS at the same time next week for more hard-boiled action and mystery with Jeff Regan, Investigator. Written by Larry Roman, produced by Sterling Tracy. Alice was played by Lorette Philbrant. Charles Seal was Preston. Ken Christie was Lafarge. Jack Petruzzi was Sanducci. Yvonne Patey was Lois. And Sidney Miller was Gus. 29,000 nurses are needed now to join the new Army Nurse Corps Officers Reserve. For the first time in history, qualified nurses have the opportunity of receiving commissions in the regular Army Reserve. These nurses will remain on inactive status, ready to serve their country in time of emergency. 4,000 of them, if they wish, may choose active duty. All nurses who receive commissions will benefit from the opportunity for specialized training offered to them by the Army. Inactive reserve status will not interfere with the nurse's civilian life, but the educational opportunities offered her by the Army Medical Department will be of great advantage in her work. So don't wait. If you're a registered graduate nurse between the ages of 21 and 45, drop a card for complete information to the Adjutant General, Washington, D.C. Original music for this program is by Milton Charles. Bob Stevenson speaking. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System. The Columbia Broadcasting System presents... Yours truly, Johnny Dollar. The next half hour has its baggage packed to take a trip with America's fabulous freelance insurance investigator, Johnny Dollar. At insurance investigation, he's just an expert. At making out his expense account,
He is an absolute genius.
Expense account submitted by Special Investigator Johnny Dollar to Home Office, Oriental West, Cargo Bonding Company, San Francisco. The following is an accounting of my expenditures during my investigation of delayed cargo aboard the SS Shanghai Wayfarer, or the case of the slow boat from China. Expense account, item one, $181.52. Plane fare from Hartford to San Francisco in answer to your urgent call. Expense account, item two, $3. Lunch on Fisherman's Wharf in answer to my stomach's urgent call. Item three, $1.20. Cab fare to your office.
Dollar, my name is Fundy. I haven't had the pleasure of meeting you before.
I mean, I say it's a pleasure meeting you. It's a rough trip. I'm glad it's over.
Over? Oh, it's just begun. Here, Dollar. This is your plane ticket to Singapore.
Singapore?
Mm-hmm.
You know, Fundy, I had a choice.
Really?
To come to San Francisco to see you or to take a case in Boston. A nice old lady on Beacon Hill clubbed her husband with an early American bed warmer. But no, rather than New England broiled lobster, I'd rather have San Francisco cracked crab. Now, all of a sudden, Singapore. May I ask why?
Yes. We've bonded against the delay a $120,000 cargo of raw tin aboard the Shanghai Wayfarer. The ship was due to sail from Singapore 3 weeks ago. Still out there, tied up in the Tanjong Pagar dock.
What's the delay? Mutinous? Mechanical? Or just plain mysterious?
I'm afraid it's a little of each. We flew an expediter out there 10 days ago to see what he could do. All the satisfaction we've had from this man, Harrison, is a report that since his arrival, the Wayfarer's main shaft has burned out, her freshwater pumps have fouled up, and her steering machinery has gone on the fritz.
You don't need an insurance investigator. You need a good plumber.
Well, maybe you're right. But anyhow, you'll find our man Harrison, William Harrison, at the Crown Colony Hotel. He'll fill in the details. Dollar, you have only a matter of hours after you hit Singapore to get the Shanghai Wayfarer started on its way. I must impress upon you the fact that any delay after that will cost this company $2,500 a day.
Well, all I can promise is the old college try. Times like this, I wish I'd gone to college. Well, anyway, I'm in the right town to make my last night in the States a good one. A few drinks with the right gal at the top of the mark. A few rare steaks at Alfred's. A few dances to Freddie Martin's music at the St. Francis. A few moments alone in the arms.
Dollar.
Huh?
That sounds mighty good. But your plane leaves in 2 hours.
2 hours? Well, I guess I'll have to do without the drinks, the dinner, and the dancing. Expense account item four, $120. Lost in the course of teaching fellow passenger how to play poker. My mother warned me never to play cards with strangers on trains or steamships. I wish she'd included airplanes. You'd implied, Fundy, that the situation smelled. Well, you should have caught a whiff of the city, especially the native sections through which I had to pass on my way to the Crown Colony Hotel. I found it on Anson Road. I found myself a room. I also found William Harrison's room. Harrison? Hey, Harrison! But I didn't find Harrison. All I found was a calling card from my old friend Trouble. Wherever Harrison was, he didn't want to be, and he left a trail of broken furniture and blood to prove it. I searched the dresser. Shirt size, 14. Socks, 9. That meant Harrison was a small man. I went to the bathroom, shaving brush and toothbrush, still wet, indicating that he'd been there not too many hours before I arrived. Then I tried the wastebasket. In addition to one large glob of used chewing gum, an empty cigarette package, and some old Kleenex, I found a swizzle stick with a name on it. The Collier Key Bar. All that meant was that Harrison had a head cold and had been trying to cure it with Singapore slings. But at least I knew where he'd been drinking them. The Collier Key Bar looked out on the harbor. It was dark enough inside to give a man a good excuse for drinking nightcaps at noon.
Your pleasure, sir?
Say, how are you on mixed drinks?
Mixed drinks? Governor, if I don't know how to make them, I look them up in the book. If they ain't in the book, I fake them. Now, what will it be?
Straight bourbon.
Right, Joseph.
Oh, hey, bartender.
Yes, sir.
Are you by any chance acquainted with an American named Harrison?
Harrison, sir?
Yeah. He arrived in Singapore about 10 days ago. Small man with a cold in his head.
Oh, tiresome. Sure, I met him right enough. He's been coming in every night with a chief engineer from one of the ships in port.
Oh, yeah? What ship is that?
Well, the Shanghai Wayfarer, I think.
Well, the Shanghai Wayfarer. What's this engineer's name?
Yeah, now, hold on. I ain't getting him into any trouble, am I? He's a nice chap, he is. A handsome tipper.
This handsome?
My governor, 20 American dollars, why? Compared to you, sir, Mr. Frank Moore is downright tight-fisted. Well, now about that, I've done it. I let Mr. Frank Moore's name slip right out. My missus is right. For a little man, I've got a ruddy large mouth.
Expense account, item 5. Rickshaw fare to the Tanjung Pagar docks, 10 cents. Tip to Pony Boy, $1. The ships moored fore and aft of the Shanghai Wayfarer were busy stuffing the pungent treasures of the East into their deep steel pockets. And the only sign of life aboard the Shanghai Wayfarer was the right hand of the burly gangway watch. It was holding a knife with a 6-inch blade and slicing thin slivers off a plug that looked more like tar than tobacco. As a gangway watch, he might have been fine. But as a reception committee, he was no Elsa Maxwell.
That's far enough, mate. There's nobody aboard and there's nobody coming aboard.
It's all right with me. All I want is a little information. Where can I find your chief engineer, Frank Moore?
You come to the wrong place. By the icebox over at the Singapore police. They fished him out of the harbor this morning, stabbed to death.
Oh? Are there any idea who did it?
Holding some dame he's been playing around with. No, I don't know her name.
Have they got anything else?
Listen, mate, my job is to guard the ship, not answer questions.
Okay, okay, have it your way. Oh, watch out for pirates.
The British chief inspector, Singapore police, gave me everything except an invitation to tea. But unfortunately, he never even heard of Harrison. He took me into the morgue, and a look at Frank Moore's body told me nothing I didn't already know. He'd been stabbed, all right. And whoever had killed him had sunk him with a hole in one. As for his personal effects, his Maritime Union card confirmed the fact that he was indeed the chief engineer of the Shanghai Wayfarer. A stack of crisp American $20 bills in his wallet made me wonder whether he hadn't been picking up a little extra pin money for delaying the departure of his ship. And finally, a photograph that made me admire the late Mr. Moore's taste in women. Whoever it was that said, "Never the twain shall meet," should have met her. She was half caste and all woman. Her picture was inscribed to Frank Moore. "Yours forever, Chandra." From the inspector, I learned two more things. One, the fact that the police had already questioned and released her. And two, her business address, the Wardlaw Bar on Malay Street.
Hello, Mr. Yank. You like a midnight sing song girl?
No. The only girl I want to hear sing songs is Dinah Shore. Go on, beat it, will you? Oh, hey, wait a minute.
Yes, Stuart?
Where's Chandra?
Oh, she go across to Penang tonight. You buy me a drink, mister? We sit right over.
Munja, the gula! Get it! Oh, Munja, hello! I suppose you went home to Shanghai one night, in your own coffin.
Complete with stab wounds, no doubt.
Why you say that? Why you ask for Chandra?
I'm a stranger in town. I can't find a local chapter of the Lonely Hearts Club. So, shall we find a quiet table?
I don't know you.
No, but you knew Frank Moore. That gives us something in common.
Over there is one.
This doesn't sound like a very quiet table to me.
In Singapore, you will learn whispers stand out in the quiet. They disappear in the noise.
I'll bow to the wisdom of the native guide. But who said I had any secrets?
You talk about Frank Moore, so I know. If you do not have secrets to give, there must be secrets you like to learn. But I tell the police everything I know, which is nothing.
Oh.
No, you are disappointed in me.
No, no, not at all. You make good scenery. And I'll bet there's quite a story that goes with you.
Oh, you'll find me interesting.
I'm a man.
Why do you come to me?
Well, there were two places I could go for what I'm after. And you're much prettier than the SS Shanghai Wayfarer. I'm looking for a lead on a man named Harrison. Your murdered friend Frank Moore knew him, so... figures you know him.
You are wrong. I do not know him. I do not even know you.
Oh, well, that's soon fixed. My name is Johnny Dollar.
Your name is nice.
Especially the salad part, huh?
You are very droll, but I see when you make this joke there is no smile on your face. You are worried about your friend, Mr. Harrison?
Yeah, that's right.
Maybe he was lonely tonight. Maybe he does not want you to find him.
Ah, you certainly make me feel much better. How about a drink?
I never drink before midnight.
All right, then I'll wait. We'll have one then.
All right, Johnny. But we don't have it here. We go to my house. There it is cool on the river. And there it is quiet. So we do not have to whisper.
Midnight must have been invented for Singapore, and her house must have been invented for midnight. Only one thing looked out of place. Up on the wall was a souvenir of Chandra's war effort, a real American baseball bat, a Louisville Slugger. And on it was written, "Remember the U.S. Marines." Everything else in the place was soft. The lights, cushions, and Chandra.
It is nicer to drink here, no?
Yeah, may I say, it's a mite intoxicating without a drink. I wish the boys back in my high school senior class could see me now.
What do you mean?
In the graduation annual, they predicted I'd be a bookkeeper.
Oh, I do not understand you.
And neither did the boys in my senior class.
Johnny, please say things I can understand. I want to know you better.
Maybe if I stop talking altogether, you'll get to know me better.
Johnny.
So I stopped talking, but I didn't stop thinking. When I'd mentioned Harrison to Chandra earlier, she said maybe he was lonely tonight. If she didn't know him or anything about him, I wondered how she knew that he was missing tonight and not for a couple of days, or maybe even longer. Besides, the boyfriends of women like her don't keep secrets. I still assumed that if Frank Moore had known Harrison, Chandra had known Harrison. I also assumed that she'd spited me into her parlor for purposes other than social. And that notion was seconded soon after I had it, when somebody kicked the door open.
Yes, it's you, Johnny Dollar.
The two boys in the door were not from Western Union. And ugly as they were, Chandra left my side to join them, which made me think that maybe my senior class had been right. Looking at that trio's six eyes and two guns glaring at me, I wished I was a bookkeeper.
In just a moment, we'll return to the second act of Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar. But first, here it is almost the end of February. All over the country, people are thinking about their new cars. All but one man. And he remains quite content with his old automobile and wearing apparel. An ancient Maxwell and a well-worn toupee. For these reasons, and for several others, named Mary, Dennis, Don, Phil, and Rochester, he now has the number one comedy show in America. All over the country, people think about him, too, every Sunday night. Hear the Jack Benny Show with Claude Rains as Jack's special guest next Sunday on all these same CBS network stations. And now, back to Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar.
The men with the guns, described from left to right, were a fat man with three chins and a bald dome, and with him, a punk with a sneer and arms that were too long for the rest of him. A gun muzzled me into a chair and started making anything but sense.
Very well, Sandra, my dear. We are at last face to face with the mysterious stranger, Johnny Dollar.
Now, don't kill the suspense and tell me why.
He knows why. He came to the Wardlow Bar. He knew about Frank Moore and he was looking for the other one, Harrison. That is why I phoned you.
Well, it would seem then that this unfortunate chain of events is nearing the final link.
Yeah, this guy uses his head better than Harrison did.
Well, Della?
I'm using my head right now.
Splendid, splendid. So doing, you may well prevent Harrison's death, as well as your own.
Oh, well, that's better than nothing. But is that all you can offer?
Skip the bargaining, Rustline. Takes too much time.
Quiet, Corgi. The times when money is cheaper than the results of your kind of blind violence. Well, Dollar, you do have a price.
Take a tip for my last name. Start bidding.
I tell you, you're nuts, Rustline. You aren't sure he knows where it is.
He must know. He was looking for Harrison. They both know.
You'll be quiet, both of you. £500 English dollar. Where is it?
At times like this, I keep my mouth shut and my ears open.
750. Surely, Dollar, since you vented the situation at such a late date, that is profit enough.
Oh, well, I'm a man of expensive taste. I've always aspired to such things as $200 cigarette lighters.
Go ahead. Keep spitting out that wise talk and you'll be spitting out teeth. How'd you like to go swimming with your hands and feet tied?
I could bite my tongue.
not yet, Corgi, my boy. This man is worthless, dead. Perhaps, Dolly, we can induce you to talk in much the same way as we could prepare a parrot by slitting the tongue.
You know, Rosalind, your mother must have been scared by Sidney Greenstreet.
Why, you...
Either this guy is nuts or he doesn't know anything.
What I know would fill a police blotter.
Okay. You know nothing of psychology, my boy. What this man is attempting to pass off as a show of bravery is based purely on the knowledge that he is, momentarily at least, of some considerable value to us alive. Now, Dollar, be careful. Before you make your final decision, bear in mind you've heard our final offer. Now, sir, what shall it be?
Oh, the squirrel said to the little girl when she asked him what he wanted for Christmas, nuts.
Very well, Dollar. Corgi.
Thanks.
I finally came to in the dark, trussed up like a turkey, and lay there trying to figure it out. Obviously, the two rude dudes thought I knew something I didn't know. But what I did know was that finding Harrison had turned into a big, fat headache. Also, that I had accomplished exactly nothing towards speeding the SS Shanghai Wayfarer over the bounding main. While I was comforting myself by repeating over and over that old insurance company soother, never say die, I discovered I wasn't alone.
Hello.
Huh?
You, who are you?
Well, you were here first, you tell me.
Well, my name is Harrison.
Harrison?
Yes, who are you?
I'm Johnny Dollar. I was sent out here by the Oriental West Cargo Bonding Company.
Oriental West?
Yes, I was supposed to do what you couldn't get done. And look at me now. Getting hit over the head and dumped in here must be par for the course. How long you been here, and why?
I've been driving myself crazy trying to figure that out.
Well, this little guest house, wherever we are, must only have one set of proprietors. I can tell you who they are, at least by the names they're using tonight. Rosalind and Corgi. They offer me 750 English pounds to tell them where something called It was. What is it?
What's a package? What's in it? I don't know. It belonged to the chief engineer of the Shanghai Wayfarer, Frank Moore. He was helping me try to get the ship on its way, and I owed him a favor. He asked me to drop this package at a bar, the
Wardlow bar, yeah, go ahead.
That's right. I was supposed to give it to a girl named Chandra. She wasn't there, so I got her address and went out to her place.
You mean that package is at Chandra's house?
Yes. When I got out there, the Chinese maid let me in. I waited as long as I could, and then rather than leave what might be a valuable package just lying around loose, I put it into the bottom drawer of a dresser and left.
Oh, great. For such things, I go around laying down my life.
It's obvious that these men will stop at nothing to get their hands on that package.
Well, when they asked you where it was, why didn't you tell them? And neither one of us would be here. What's more, I'm beginning to think the sooner they get the package, the sooner our ship sails.
Frank Moore had been a good friend to me. He wanted Chandra to have it, and I couldn't just turn it over to those two.
Well, I've got some news for you. And this should make you really unhappy. Those two happen to be in business with Chandra.
Huh?
They're all on the same team. She's one of them.
What an idiot I've been.
Well, here we are, all roped up. You know, for a pair of guys who came out here to speed a shipload of raw tin on its way, we're doing just dandy. We're lucky if we get out of this thing alive. Offhand, I'd say our host probably murdered Frank Moore trying to get that package. Maybe we're next. Uh-oh. Maybe right now. A beam from a powerful flashlight stabbed us in the eyes. The sudden change from too much dark to too much light kept us blinded.
Well, look who's here.
At least the voice behind the glare wasn't Rosalind's and it wasn't Corgi's. But it was a familiar voice, one I'd heard and heard lately. He walked in on us, the flash in one hand and in the other, a knife with a 6-inch blade. At first I wondered whether it was the one that had been buried in Frank Moore's back. And then I remembered where I'd seen it before. The man bending over us was the burly gangway watch from the Shanghai Wayfarer.
And you told me to watch out for pirates.
Well, this situation is getting a little overcrowded. I didn't think there was room for any more. What do you want?
You know what I want, Dollar. The same thing Rosalind and Corgi are ripping your hotel room apart for right now.
Now, don't tell me you're looking for it, too. Two things I know about that package, mister.
The name is Rourke.
Okay, Rourke. One thing I know is that it's dangerous company. The other is I want no part of it. The only thing I'm interested in is getting the Shanghai Wayfarer out of port.
That won't be hard once I get that package. Where is it, Dollar?
I'll trade the answer to that question for a little freedom.
Okay, hold still.
Thanks. Harrison's next. I want him with us in case he's lying.
All right. Okay, Harrison, roll over.
Hey, you!
When Rourke bent over Harrison, I drop-kicked the flashlight out of his hand, ran across the darkened room, through the open door, and kept on running. Sometimes the long way around is the shortest way home, so I headed for Chandra's house. I not only had some getting even to do, but I had some curiosity to satisfy. Somehow, the Shanghai Wayfarer's failure to sail on schedule was tied up with a mysterious package. But how? Why? I decided I'd earn the right to see what was in that package.
Johnny!
I didn't want you to be lonely. I heard your playmates are over making themselves at home in my room, so I thought you and I could have a little chat. Maybe I've got a surprise for you.
What, Johnny?
I think I know where that package is.
Johnny, you get that package. We both don't worry for the rest of our lives. But we must hurry before Rosalind and Corgi come back. We go now.
Okay, where's your bedroom?
Johnny, what do you mean?
Now, come on, where is it?
Come, I'll show you. No, it cannot be. It's another one, no.
It's been here all the time. And now while I open this thing, you can go and have yourself a nervous breakdown. Say, this is more fun than unwrapping Christmas presents. Now I take off the cover. Wow. Now I know how the winner feels on Hit the Jackpot. The package was paper all the way through. Brown wrapping on the outside and green spending on the inside. Big bundles of fresh, clean American 20s. Thousands of the same kind of bills that the Singapore police had found in the late Frank Moore's wallet. It would have taken half a day to count it, and I'd wasted too much time already.
They'd be no good to you without me, Johnny. You have to know how to get rid of them.
Oh, counterfeit, huh?
Yes. They are made in China. Frank Moore brought them from Shanghai to Rosalind to take to the States, but Rosalind was not here in Singapore. He was late, so Frank had to make some accidents happen to his ship to keep it from sailing. But then he changed his mind. He decided he would give the money himself. But Rosalind caught up with him.
Oh, I see. He was sending them to you by way of Harrison, just before he was knifed by Rosalind, huh? Who talked him into that? You, by any chance?
You and I could be very rich, Johnny.
You never give up, do you?
$500,000 there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that should buy about 50 years in jail. I'm taking this down to customs and you're with it.
No, I do not think you do.
Uh-huh. Time to play another visiting team. Come on, beautiful. I don't want you in the way.
Let go of me, Harrison!
I grabbed her, lashed her wrist with a cord from the package, and since she liked money so much, I stuffed her mouth with a fistful of those troublesome $20 bills. I locked her and the rest of the loot into a closet and dashed into the other room looking for a weapon. And then I remembered that Louisville slugger from the U.S. Marines. I was glad they'd landed. I grabbed it off the wall, got a toehold in the carpet on the left side of that door, wrapped my fingers around the bat, swung it on the back of my shoulder, and waited.
Thunder, my dear, we just came.
Oh. Two outs and one to go. Three outs and the side is retired. What a ball game. Now, first, I take your guns. And now we sit and wait for you to wake up.
I'll take over from here on in, Dollar.
Huh? Oh, I don't know about that, Rourke. I happen to be the guy who has the gun.
Oh? Well, here. Take a look at this.
What's in your wallet that I want to look at? More hot 20s? I'm not taking my eyes off you, Rourke.
Okay, I'll turn around with my hands up and then you can look at it.
Okay, fair enough. But if you so much as move, I'll start shooting.
That's the deal.
Oh, it's a fine time to learn this.
Are you satisfied?
John Joseph Rourke, U.S. Treasury Department. Come on in.
I'm sorry I couldn't come out into the open before, Dollar, but I was too close to the payoff of this case to take any chances.
Well, you know, I'm beginning to think that just being in this town is taking chances.
That counterfeit's been funneling through this port on its way from China for months. We had Moore staked out for a long time, but this is the first shot we had at the top. That's him lying there on the floor, Roswell. Now I've got him. Oh, your pal Harrison told me where I can find the only other thing I need, that package of hot money in the dresser drawer.
Oh, it's now moved into the bedroom closet, along with a package of hot woman.
Well, then, Dolly, it looks like my job out here is just about done.
Yeah, I guess so. Hey, wait a minute.
Hmm?
You're from the Treasury Department.
Yes?
Well, then, after you get all these birds into their cages, how about helping me make out my income tax? Expense account, item 6. Hotel bill, one night in Singapore, $5. Item 7, one new outfit, replacing mine, which was ruined in course of taking midnight dip in Singapore River, $200. Item 8, $20. Bar checks for cheering up one William Harrison, your expediter, whose innocence had him running errands for the man who was holding up the departure of your ship. Item 9, $375. Spent while killing time until the departure of my plane back to the States, after the Shanghai Wayfarer finally sailed. You see, this time, I had 4 hours on my hands instead of the 2 you allowed me in San Francisco. Expense account total, $1,407. Signed, yours, truly, Johnny Dollar.
In just a moment, we'll tell you about next week's Johnny Dollar Adventure. But first, for more exciting drama in the mystery and adventure line, remember CBS 2 thrill-packed Saturday night shows, The Adventures of Philip Marlowe and Gangbusters. Be sure to hear Philip Marlowe and Gangbusters tomorrow night on most of these same CBS network stations. Next week, CBS will take you adventuring with Johnny Dollar, hitting the hot spots in Palm Beach and New Orleans, with the star of Hades, Diamond, on a trip all points south. Charles Russell plays the role of Johnny. Our music is composed and conducted by Mark Warnow. Yours truly, Johnny Dollar, is written by Paul Dudley and Gil Dowd, and is produced and directed by Richard Sandville for CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
That's Case Closed for this week. I hope you enjoyed our selections this time. You can find more from Johnny Dollar, Jeff Regan, past episodes of this show, all the other podcasts, and everything else Relic Radio at relicradio.com. There's also a donate button there if you'd like to help support this and all the shows. Give that a click. Got some downloadable sets for certain donation amounts, though any amount is always appreciated. Big thanks to those who have helped out. Thanks for joining me today. Talk to you again next Wednesday with another hour of Case Closed. Case Closed is produced by and for RelicRadio.com. Rebroadcast of this show without permission is strictly prohibited.